Welcome back to Knox Nature, the podcast about archery, hunting, hiking, conservation, firearms, and whatever else I feel like talking about. Episode 17 today, a little bit shorter of an episode because we got a late start. We just got done skiing, so it was a day of wipeouts for me specifically. I don't know about you fellas, but I biffed it a couple times, hard.
I think I only crashed once.
Yeah, you also weren't hitting a whole lot.
No, I was taking it pretty easy because Friday was the day of wipeouts for me.
Yeah, both of us, again. Yeah. Every time I go out, it's not like I can't get down the hill. It's just that I do stupid things, then I end up hurting myself. So there's some sort of a lesson in there. I don't know what it is, but, you know.
Right. You just got to practice more.
Probably, yeah. I mean, it's technically free for me to go to the hill with the season pass. Yeah. I just got to show up, so.
I think I biffed it 4 or 6 times. I don't know.
Yeah, but also tell people what was going on with your board.
Oh, well, you know, to be fair, the jumps, I don't think that really affected the landing on stuff. It was more so just because I was hitting jumps and not landing correctly. Like, side hit. Jumps and, yeah,
sure.
In that cliff.
But you also were riding with a broken binding.
Yeah, my binding was broken right from the get-go. So, like, split right down the middle.
Right down the middle.
So, I was just kind of riding around. It was, like, popping off my board as I was riding. It was kind of fun.
Yeah.
A little bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I bet.
And honestly, it wasn't bad. Like, I just couldn't, like, carve super hard.
Yeah.
Like, really do any nose press or butter or anything like that.
You know, you never posted that video of the Blue Jay to the Instagram?
Oh. I forgot.
I just thought about that.
Yeah.
You should do that.
I'll do it right now.
All right. It's going up. So
it's going up.
If you listen to episode 16 and you were confused as to why you couldn't see anything, it is there now. So, or it will be shortly. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the only, like, housekeeping thing, you know. It didn't really have anything crazy. To be honest with you, right now is slow for everything. There's just not a whole lot going on. In between deer season and turkey season, none of us are really, like, waterfowl guys, so things get different, but it's okay. Figure it out. So, Justin.
What's up?
You want to talk about Kafaru for a second?
I always love talking about Kafaru.
Okay. So, just for a little bit of, a little bit of context for people. I have two Kafaru packs, one frame. One of them, the Kafaru Manimal, is, I calculated it the other day. I want to say it's like a 46-liter pack plus the cinch, which is another 700 cubic inches. And that is a total of like 49 liters or, I don't know, something like that, right? Yeah. And I love the Manimal. It worked great for whitetail season. I'll use it again for whitetail for sure. I thought I was going to be able to use it on this backpacking trip. I had pretty much everything in there, but I had to order a new sleeping bag because I ordered a 0-degree bag. I wanted to be toasty. And the problem was I couldn't turn the sleeping bag sideways in the bottom of my pack. So instead, I went with a bag that has a total of like 4,500 cubic inches, which actually I'm going to do that calculation right now. Let's see. So it's like almost a 70-liter pack. Giant comparatively to the Manimal. But that pack, the way that Kafaru builds their stuff, it's so modular. Mm-hmm. And it's not specific right, like the Manimal's not technically specific to the arc frame, but it's built for the arc frame.
Yeah.
And that Modeuse is built for the duplex frame.
Yeah.
And it's so simple, dude. There, it's like 5 minutes to swap the bags. Once you understand how to do it, it's so easy.
Yeah, that's what's cool about them. It's like I have the, you know, my smaller bag is the Quandary.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. That's not made to go on a frame.
Right, yeah.
And I just, you know, bought some buckle kits and stuff and made it work. And then I could sandwich. I have a camp bag and, you know, I just kind of made this custom setup and it worked extremely well.
You just have compression straps around the sides and stuff.
Yeah, but I have it so it could fold down too.
Mm-hmm.
And like when I was running for whitetails, I have a different bag now. I don't even remember what that one's called.
The big fucker?
Yeah, it starts with an A. It's like Arasoka or something like that. But when I was running my other bag for whitetails, I could put everything in the camp bag and then just have like the stuff that I wanted in the tree stand in my small backpack. And when I got to the bottom of the tree, leave the frame and the camp bag, unbuckle my other bag.
Yeah, keep going.
And then, you know, climb up the tree and hang my backpack from the tree so I'd have a smaller bag in the tree.
Yeah. Nice. So I just opened the Kefaru website to look at the name of your pack.
Yeah.
The 44 mag reimagined is what showed up.
Oh.
It's coming out April 24th.
Really?
The day after my birthday.
Happy birthday, Nick.
The problem is it's smaller than the Modeuse still.
Yeah. The Modeuse is just a bigger version of the 44 mag.
Yeah. So I don't really have a need for a 44 mag. No, but it's cool that they have one in Ranger Green, though. So let me see. I think it's like the Absaroka,
is that it?
I'm pretty sure that's it, because it's not these other ones.
I kind of want to get a Modeuse now, because I need a new hiking backpack.
The hard part is you have to buy the frame, too.
Yeah.
You know, so then you're
But then
in.
Once you have the frame, you can buy different bags for the frame.
Honestly, if I was going to do it now, I'd buy an arc frame and buy one of the bags that's designed to go on an arc frame.
Yeah.
Like that 44 mag, the new one, is going to be designed for the arc frame.
Right.
And the Manimal does work on the duplex frame, but it's designed for the arc frame. I would imagine it's going to integrate much better. And the arc frame is going to be able to handle so much more weight. It's much more rigid. It has like a full contour for your back and everything, plus the little
I think
pad.
I would really like, because like my frame is the tactical frame.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have a lot of flex to it.
Yeah.
And I think it would, you know, if I went to the arc frame, I would still get the capability of the tactical frame, but have the flex of the duplex light.
Yeah, that's what I have is the duplex light.
So I think it would just be a lot more comfortable.
In my bag, so I have that. I have the Modeuse with almost everything in it. There's no water in it. Like, I don't have the hydration bladder is not full, and I don't have my Nalgene in it. But you're talking, what, 5 pounds with that probably, those two? Between a Nalgene and a 2-liter water pouch, it's probably about 5 pounds there.
Maybe a little bit more with the 2-liter water pouch, probably. Yeah, I don't know.
Regardless, I bet that pack is still, my goal is to stay under 40. I think it's under 30.
Really?
It is so much lighter. Even the Modeuse loaded, it's so much lighter than my whitetail pack. Because everything's like nylon. You know what I'm saying? It's like my sleeping bag is half that pack.
Right.
With my whitetail setup, everything was aluminum. Yeah. And so it's all heavy as shit.
Right.
But with this setup I've got now, it's like, and I love it. Yeah, I'm not using all of the space for it, right?
Yeah.
Like, because it's got the side bolsters. It's where you can put like a spotting scope or whatever. I've got my camp chair in one side and my tent on the other. Tent poles.
What camp chair do you have?
I don't remember. It was one off of Amazon. It is sweet. It was like $40. It's like a pound and a half.
Really?
Comfortable as hell. Yeah. But it's low to the ground.
Yeah. They usually are.
The other ones, well, there's some that are like you can sit. It's lower than most of those folding camp chairs like
that. Yeah, but it's lighter. Like, mine's pretty low to the ground, but it's a pound.
Yeah, mine's 1.5 pounds, but it was only $45 or something like that. Yeah,
mine was like 100.
Yeah, and I was going to get one of the really nice ones, but I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to like this type of thing. So, I sat in it for a while the other day, and it was, the biggest thing is like, I was worried about pinch points, but this one's real wide up top. Because I've got broader shoulders, and a lot of guys were saying that they'll dig into your shoulder blades with, mm-hmm. There's a really popular brand out there. I can't think of the name of it right now.
Helinox?
Yeah, Helinox.
Yeah.
The Helinox ones, the if you get one of their lighter weight ones, there's guys that are like, hey, if you have broader shoulders, this might pinch your broader shoulders, and if you're taller, it'll pinch, like, right on your shoulder blades.
Yeah, so I have the REI version of that.
Yeah.
It's like the Helinox Zero. It's basically the same thing.
Yeah. I like it. I mean, we'll see on this trip. This trip is going to be big for testing a lot of things. If I find myself doing a lot of winter camping, which I can't really imagine, but maybe, you never know. But if I find myself, I guess I should say, if I find myself using a 0 degree bag a lot, I'll probably buy a downfill bag just because they're going to be more comfortable. Right. This one's synthetic.
The only thing about down, though, is it's not warm when it's wet.
Yes, but the tent's waterproof, so.
True. But you never know.
You never know. It's just, I'm also not bringing my hammock setup because it's another 3 pounds that I just don't want.
Yeah.
I was planning on it, and I'm like, yeah. Then I was like, well, maybe I'll just bring the hammock and straps so I could just, like, set it up to lounge with, but I'm bringing the chair. So if I want to just lounge around, I'll just sit in the chair.
Yeah.
Whatever. But no, I am excited for that. This is the other cool part, right? All of the compression straps on that pack cinch everything down. And so it's really flat. All of that empty space, I can suck right out of it. I can bring all of the weight as instead of hanging away from the frame, I can cinch it all down and bring it up. Higher up on the frame and closer to it, because I've got like most of my weight is distributed right over my back, which is where you want.
Yeah.
And so that helped lock everything in. And then I don't know the exact time frame for everything, but I do know that on Kefar's website right now, or at least as of a week ago when I checked, you cannot buy the cinch separate. It only comes with the manimal.
Right. I think that's true.
But that bag clipped right onto the Madus.
Mm-hmm.
Right onto it. Like it was designed to. And it looks kind of, I think it looks kind of cool. Some could argue it looks kind of goofy because, you know, one is coyote brown or what, you know, desert tan. The other one's ranger green. But I think it looks kind of cool, and I'm really happy that I have the cinch on there.
Yeah.
I don't need it. I could put, because that's going to basically house my gaiters if I'm not using them, my puffy jacket, my rain jacket, the ambient jacket, merino wool, or the ambient hoodie, merino wool hoodie. That's where those types of things are going to go. Probably a spare, maybe a spare pair of socks. Quick grab, like, clothing items.
Yeah.
If we're on the trail, I can just like rip my bag off and quickly grab that, not have to undo everything. So those are things that whatever, that's what that's for. And I don't need it on the pack, but I like it that way. Cause the other thing is like, if we're just doing like a loop hike, that's like 2 miles and we're not like camping somewhere along there, I can leave my big pack back with the truck.
Yeah, and just take
the cinch and with my water bottle, and I'm good. You know what I'm saying? I could carry my water bottle, or like a 1 or 2 mile hike, I might not even use it, might not even bring it.
Yeah.
Might just walk it. I love that. I love that. I did get a MSR water filter. I got the smaller one. It's like a little squeeze pump thing.
Well,
works pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I didn't want the giant one because I already have a giant stove. But this one's like $60. You just like stick it in something, and you can squeeze it and it'll like filter water and you can pump it into a water bottle, or you can flip it around, flip the filter around, stick the pump in your water reservoir and pump it back out the hose if you take the pre-filter off.
Oh.
You can pump it back out the hose into, so you could stick it in a stream if you didn't, like for whatever reason, you can go the other way.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I don't remember what mine is called. It's MSR, but it's like a...
I think I saw the one that you have. Yeah. The way you were describing it and what this one looked like. Problem is, it's like this big. You know, it looked pretty big for what
it
was.
Yeah, it's like it's maybe half of a Nalgene.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This one's about the size of a beer can.
Really? That's pretty good.
With the hose. You know, it's got like a big rubber band that holds everything together.
Right. I've used mine a ton, though.
This one will filter. It said it's good to filter. It typically filters, I want to say, 2 liters a minute or something like that. So it's not too bad.
That's pretty good.
And then it'll do like 24,000 filters in the, or 24,000 liters in the filter's lifetime.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. But it can't freeze, which I think is pretty common for most water filters.
Yeah.
But my sleeping bag has a little pouch on the inside.
Hmm.
So I can just stick it in there. Should be good.
Yeah.
During the day, I'll probably just put it in a coat pocket or something.
Yeah, you should use those like MSR Aqua Tabs.
I couldn't find them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. I could have found them online, but I couldn't find them. I went to Backcountry North and Sportsman's.
Really?
I couldn't find them.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was like the iodine flakes or whatever.
Right.
I didn't want to do that because you can get like eye irritations and stuff and get like...
Yeah.
Weird tasting water, but like the dissolvable tablets,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't find them.
Yeah, I always did those. I, you know, filtered the water and I used the Aqua Tabs just to.
I think what I might do, like, yeah. The other thing I thought about is like, if there's snow and we have the time to do it, I might melt some snow, and boil it.
It just takes forever.
It does take forever, but like I said, if we have the time to do it. I don't know. It's going to burn a lot of fuel, too, so there's that. Or if we have a water source, I might just boil the water and then filter it.
Yeah.
Just kind of like as a double check.
My dad never used a water filter before our trip. He always boiled the water. All his water. It's the only thing he did.
It filters a lot. It won't filter... It'll filter bacteria, but it won't filter, like, viruses.
Yeah.
Which I don't think your water filter would either.
Probably not.
Maybe. Your water filter will filter. Like, boiling water also won't filter sediment or microplastics. Not all the time.
Right.
Your water filter will do microplastics and sediment.
Yeah. That's what's nice.
It'll clog your filter, but it will do it.
Yeah. If I go within, like, a dirty stream or something, like, little tiny crick.
Yeah.
I have to clean my filter more often.
Mm-hmm.
It plugs up.
My goal would be to find, basically, like, as an option, if you didn't have a water filter, my goal would be to find, like, a flowing stream that's flowing all the way down the mountains, and where we find, like, you know, you fill up your water, and it looks crystal clear. It's like, I would probably drink this because we're in the Rockies.
Yeah.
But then I'll filter it or boil it anyway, and I'll be fine.
Yeah. I mean, I've drank a lot out of just small streams.
Yeah.
With no filter or anything. Like.
Well, that's the thing, too, is if you do anything to treat it, it's going to be better than just drinking.
Yeah.
Definitely better than drinking stagnant water.
Yeah, you don't want to go stagnant, for sure.
If I was dying of thirst, I'd stick my water filter in stagnant water. But.
Oh, I filtered out stagnant water. My Isle Royale was fine.
Yeah. But if you had to, like, filter out swamp water,
yeah,
that's rough, dude. Because it's going to clog your filter.
Oh, yeah.
It's also really easy
to... Scotch-Brite pad, because it's a ceramic.
Oh, nice.
It's a ceramic on the outside that has a charcoal filter on the inside, and it just clogs up on the outside, so you take your Scotch-Brite and just...
This one's super easy, because you use that pump and backflow it, and it'll push the sediment to the one side, and then you shake it. And it'll like dislodge it. And of course it gets to a certain point where it's like,
right,
you can't do it. There's tests for it. I'm not worried about it because this is I tested it a little bit, and then this is the first like real time I'll be using it.
Yeah.
But after this, there'll be tests that you can do. There's just certain like flow rate that they say if it's filling up your water bottle too fast, basically they're like it's not safe to use. But cartridges aren't bad. I want to say they're like $20. Expensive, but ideally you're not buying them all the time. It's not like you're filtering water every day.
Right.
So there's that, but I don't know. What did you do, Jared, before? Did you guys just boil water, or have you always used your water filter?
We always had, like, the very first time I went backpacking, my buddy had those Sawyer straws, and then my first few times, I had a Sawyer straw, and then I went and got one of those Grail bottles.
Oh, yeah, you were showing me that water bottle. It's like a French press. Just push it down, filters a bunch. It's pretty cool.
It's really nice, and it's fast. Like, it's... You're not supposed to press super hard, but if you're in a rush, you can press harder and filter it quicker. But I don't know. It's nice because I can filter a bunch of water pretty fast and just dump it in other water bottles that are clean.
That's the other thing is I think I'm only going to bring one. It's a 2-liter Nalgene bottle.
I always just bring that. I've never had a problem, even when I did Pictured Rocks.
Yeah.
But I guess we were close to water at all times, so if I ever ran out, I was thirsty.
I mean, the thing is, we're going to be moving every day on this trip, though. So.
Yeah, and the other thing is, we're driving around, so you can just get water.
I could honestly just buy bottled water. And
We could buy a huge pack of water from Costco, because we're driving down.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some of that kind of comes with the trip, right? Like, you kind of want to filter water and fucking be out there.
Part of the experience.
What do you think, like, are we going to be backpacking in and then camping, or is it we're going to be hiking and then we're going to be camping basically right next to the truck all the time?
No, I think it'll be a lot of backpack camping. That's more of, like, what Future and Justin and them are into. Like, I know when I did my trip out west a few years ago, probably only like two times where we actually backpacked in and camped. Most of the time we were just camping by the truck, or we would camp at a campsite and like set up. We had a big 8-person tent.
Yeah. That's the only thing I'm not really looking forward to having to take down my tent every day.
Yeah.
Like wake up in the morning and take all that shit down. That's going to kind of suck.
It's not too bad because like usually while you're taking your tent down, someone else is preparing water or something, and then they take their tent down, and you go, like, actually prepare the food, and, you know, we kind of take turns, and it's not too bad. We help each other out while you're taking your tent down, so.
I have two goals. Number one, I want to see some sort of wild animal while we're out there. Not like a bird,
like a squirrel.
No, I want to see like
Utah. I don't know.
I want to see like an elk or a mule deer or something.
When I was in Utah, I didn't see a whole lot, to be honest. Like I saw a lot of deer, but nothing really super big. Saw some cows.
Yeah.
But that was about
it. I just think like an elk, a mule deer, or a pronghorn would be really cool to see. And then I want to watch. I want to watch a sunrise and sunset, like, with a mountain landscape. I think that'd be...
Yeah.
Ideally, we'd be...
I know when we're in southern Utah, there's not going to be mountains, really.
Well, sure, but... Once the further we go north,
mm-hmm.
I think it'd be cool. So... I'm excited. I mean, there's
even down
south,
like, the canyons and stuff are pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, there's that. I mean, whatever. I have a question for you, Justin.
Shoot.
Actually, I just answered it myself, but why are you going on a Valentine's Day dinner tomorrow instead of Friday? I'm assuming it's because you have your kid.
It's because I have my kid on Friday.
Kid duty. Sucks, dude. Responsibilities, becoming an adult. If you're a kid listening to this, don't ever grow up. It sucks. And I'm like half the age of Justin, obviously, just judging by the way the top of our head looks.
I'm bald by choice.
That's true. That's true. It looks better, though.
I think so. It
looks better. I don't even, like, that's the thing. I don't even think about the fact that you're bald 90% of the time. Other than when I come over and smack your head.
Yeah. Yeah, I think everyone's pretty much used to it by now.
Yeah. It's just like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought it would be a big deal. It's like, if I shaved my head and went bald, like, it'd be so weird. And then when you shaved, I was like, oh, shit, dude, that looks good. Like, it looks better.
Yep.
The thing is, you look more your age now. Because with your hair, it made you look a lot older.
Yeah. That's for sure.
And you started getting carded and shit.
Yeah, I do get carded way more now, pretty much every time.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
You get used to it.
Getting carded?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of the time, I just hand it to them. I'm like, whatever.
Right.
So, there's that, but I definitely want to do a trip, though. Not a trip, but like a, let's see. I want to look at my calendar. I think I need to, yeah, so I need to do something this weekend with my setup to test it. Because if there's anything else I need to get before the trip, like if I had to order something,
right,
I'm going to have to know what that is like right now. But next weekend, I'd be down to do something again.
Okay.
Just as like a trial run, and we could go hike as much as you wanted to, you know.
10 miles?
Sure. I'll have a week to recover.
Yeah.
So I'll do whatever. But I'm excited to get that pack on my back and start moving around and try to figure some things out. Actually,
I really want to hike from Kokaska to Fife Lake.
How far is that?
Like 30 miles.
Yeah, let's maybe do that in the summer.
Yeah.
I don't want to trudge through snow.
No, I don't either.
That's the other part, is like trudging through snow. We go on a long hike. We go on a long hike around here, but like where we, like, I don't really want to camp on state land right now. I'm going to have to shovel out a bunch of snow. I'm going to camp in my backyard probably this weekend, and I'm already going to have to shovel out a bunch of snow just to be able to set my tent up, you know?
Right.
So that part's difficult, but I'm excited. The only thing I have doubts about is that sleeping pad, because it's an off-brand sleeping pad.
It sounds nice, though.
Yeah. I have my doubts. Because, like I said, it was like $100, which is cheaper for a sleeping pad. Let me see if I can pull this up. It's called the, it's like a Wolf Atepa. I don't know how you say it.
Atepa.
Insulated sleeping pad. R value of 6.6.
Let me see it.
Ultralight. Sorry, it weighs 1.6. 5 pounds, not 1.5 pounds.
Hmm.
But yeah, here you go. But like for that price, if it works, great. I just it makes me have my doubts. I also might just stack a foam pad underneath it, because a foam pad doesn't matter if it gets wet. You're not gonna get any holes in it. You know, whatever. I can just strap it to the bottom of that pack.
Have you weighed it to see if it actually weighs 1.6 pounds?
No, but it does not feel heavy at all.
No.
It feels very light. It's very... Oh, sorry.
I don't know what mine weighs.
It's very cushiony, though.
Because I want something with a little bit more cushion, because I'm a side sleeper.
Me too. That's why I had to buy that.
And mine, I can't sleep on my side with very, very well.
Yeah. That one's like an air mattress. It takes forever to blow up, though.
Really?
Yeah, it's got like one of those fill bags. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So that helps, but it still probably took me a good 5 minutes to blow that thing up. You know they make little backpacking pumps? for like air mattresses and stuff.
Yeah.
They weigh like less than half a pound. Take a couple of double A's and then just... Wah. It's not hard with those little felt because it's also the stuff sack for it. So there's that, but we'll see how it works.
Yeah, I mean, mine's 25 ounces.
That's just like a little less than 2 pounds. What is it?
Pound is
no. That's like a pound and a half, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think his microphone mount is broken.
Really?
Yeah, it's really wobbly.
Yeah, mine gets like that sometimes.
That's right. We'll make it work.
Yep.
What is your favorite piece of gear? Probably your Kefaru for backpacking?
I mean, yeah, I would say so. That's the biggest.
Is that pack waterproof?
No. It's water resistant.
The Arborosca or whatever?
Yeah, Absaroska or whatever the fuck it is. Yeah, it's like water resistant. I really like my quilt. I haven't actually used it backpacking yet. But just
you did like camping though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that thing's really sweet.
What is the quilt value? Like, was it like a 30 degree quilt?
I'm pretty sure it's a 30 degree. Yeah.
I probably will switch to a quilt because I'm going to use this tent. It's a four season tent, so I really can't use it like middle of summer, but I like hammock camping. So if it's like hot, I'll just camp in my hammock. Yeah. But you know, like early spring, like a lot of times my family likes to do a Memorial Day camping trip.
Yeah.
It's not really like early spring, but like, you know, May, I'll be fine at night. I could probably use a 40 degree quilt in that four season tent. And it has vents too. So I can open it up and basically make it a three season tent.
Yeah.
It's going to be nice.
Yeah. I'm excited. I haven't used my tent either. I got that new Stone Glacier tent.
Oh yeah.
I haven't used that. I'm really excited to use that.
I think is that a three season?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I also heard a lot of people say, like, you can use a three season. Like, you might have, like, a little bit of temperature difference. If you're camping on, like, Everest where you're going to have a ton of wind.
Right.
And stuff like that, they're like, definitely. But.
Yeah, you pick a nice winter weekend.
And you're in the woods, you got a little bit of a windbreak, you can use a three season. Mm-hmm. It'll be fine. But this, like, again, my tent. I think we talked about this. The One Tigris.
Yeah.
Four season tent. That thing's heavy. I will admit. It's a heavy tent.
Yeah.
I haven't weighed it. It's heavy. But
is it big?
It's a good introduction. It's about Nalgene sized.
Oh, that's not bad.
When it packs down. And then obviously the poles.
Oh, yeah.
The poles are probably 18, 20 inches. Mm. And then, you know, probably 2 inches around the stuff together. And I just stuff it on the side of the pack. That's not a big deal. But it's a spider web poles, if that makes sense. Like, it's got like a...
Oh.
They're not like individual.
Huh.
It's like a frame.
Yeah.
So I just basically pull them out of the bag and they start linking together. And I just set that on top of the tent, put all the clips on, clip in the corners, tent set up. And then I just throw the fly on.
That's cool.
Yeah. So the whole tent is sealed off. It's all nylon. Because it's a four season.
Right.
All that's waterproof. And then there's a fly that goes over top of that that goes almost all the way down to the ground again. So it covers, it's like double layers basically, right. Which I think is also going to help with some insulation because it can vent, you know, air or whatever, but it'll also lock some of that underneath.
Right.
Which I think is pretty cool. And it's long enough. I want to say it's like 7 feet long. So that pad is a long wide pad. It's a very long pad. I think it's 6'6" long.
Oh, wow.
And I want to say it's, I think it's like 25 inches wide.
Hmm.
And the tent's two person.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to have a problem width wise, but the tent is, I think 7 inches or 7 inches, 7 feet. On the inside footprint.
Have you set it up yet?
Mm-hmm. And I laid down inside, plenty of room.
Really?
I haven't put the sleeping pad in the tent, though. That'll be the test, whatever. So I think I'll be able to keep all my stuff around The other thing I'm thinking about with the cinch is like with my pack, I don't know now that I'm using the Modus because it's going to be a little bit bigger than the Manimal. I was 100% confident with the Manimal and probably 70% confident with the Modus. I think I can get my bag underneath the vestibule.
You should be able to.
But I might just grab that cinch at night and just bring it in the tent with me.
Yeah.
So then if I wake up in the middle of the night and I am cold, I can just grab that puffy jacket and throw it on quick.
Right.
No big deal. So yeah, there's just a lot of advantages to having something like that. It's because this label is like the final approach bag, basically.
Yeah.
If you're doing like a mule deer western hunt, you can drop your big pack and grab your final approach bag for like your stock, and you just have like a shell in there, you know, maybe like, I don't know, a rain shell and maybe like a puffy jacket or something. But I love that thing.
I just went down the Kafaru rabbit hole. That's why I've been so quiet and on my phone the whole time. And
a little disappointed in the prices.
To get the full setup, you know, pack, frame, organization.
Yeah.
Yep. Sleeping bag, tent.
$1,200.
Stove.
Oh, sleeping bag, tent, and stove. Whoa. Yeah,
all that stuff. It's
7,000?
No, not that much. $3,000.
Yeah. Their tent is, their tents.
And this was the cheap tent. I was cracking up because their summer weather tents are more expensive than their winter tents. I think it's because the winter ones are kind of just like a tarp.
Yeah.
And the summer ones are a full tent system.
Their sleeping bags are expensive too.
Yeah, the sleeping bag was $500.
They do have a 0-degree slick bag, but yeah, it's $500.
That's the one that I clicked on. Yeah.
That'd be warm as fuck.
0-degree bag?
Mm-hmm.
They're not as, well, I have a cheaper 0-degree bag. It's not down synthetic.
Most 0-degree bags is 0-degree survival, not 0-degree comfort.
None of the, even the Nemo, what is that bag called?
But the other thing,
what is that bag called?
I don't know.
My buddy, he's done some winter camping before where he literally went snowshoeing out in the woods, set up a tarp with a sleeping bag and just camped out there. And he tried to make food, but he was so cold that he was just like, fuck it, I'm going to bed.
The Nemo Sonic is what it's called.
Mm.
That's the Nemo Sonic is one of the warmest, because it's 900 fill instead of, well, I don't, there's a couple different versions, I think. But most of them are 800 fill. On 0-degree bags.
Mm-hmm.
Nemo Sonic's at 900 fill. It's one of the warmest. One that's super popular. Feathered Friends is also really popular. But even the Nemo Sonic has a 0-degree. It's the 0 degrees is not quite the survival rating, but it's slightly lower than your limit rating.
Right.
And the comfort rating's probably in like that 15-degree range,
mm-hmm.
which is why I bought a 0-degree bag, because even if it's a colder, even if it's not quite, let's say 0 degrees is the absolute like extreme rating. That's the survival rating. That comfort rating's probably around the 20, 25 degree area. And that's exactly where we're going to be at from the long term forecast. What I've seen is like 22 degrees at nighttime in the coldest parts of Utah.
Yeah.
So I should be plenty good. When we first get there at the beginning of the week in southern Utah, I'm going to be really fucking hot because it's going to be like 65 during the day and it'll be like 35 at night. So I'll probably have to unzip that thing. There's no vents on it, but I could just unzip the one side and use it more like a quilt.
Yeah, just use it like a blanket.
It is a mummy bag, though, so it's got like a hood,
mm-hmm.
and it has a draft collar to it. So it'll like cinch down really tight if it's really cold.
Yeah.
Narrow, though. Harder on my shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
But shouldn't lose any heat that way. So I guess there's that. You can go way down the rabbit hole on sleeping bags and sleeping pads and tents and all that shit. Like, more so than we do on backpacks. Like, it's just insane.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how
backpacking space is.
But some of those guys are, like, no wonder ultralight backpacking has become such a thing. Is like, Because I was looking at an Osprey bag, and like, there's a frame to it, but like, there's no frame to it compared to a Kefaru.
Yeah,
it's like, dude, this is. Yeah, no wonder. I bet it's uncomfortable to carry 50 pounds around. I can carry 50 pounds of my Kefaru, no problem. I wouldn't be able to do 20 miles with it. But guys that are doing ultralight camping and they're hiking 10 miles and they're bitching about carrying 30 pounds, I'm like, dude.
You got to pay for titanium everything, and it's stupid expensive.
Well, yeah, or there's that.
Yeah, you're like cutting your toothbrush in half. So.
Who is that guy? You know who I'm talking about.
Dude, a lot of people do that.
There's a hunter that does
the
that.
The one guy that we're going with, he does kind of ultralight stuff and tries to cut weight wherever possible. His sleeping pad, when he takes all the air out of it and like rolls it up and puts it in its compression sack, it's smaller than my fist.
Really?
It's
probably not very thick then.
It's tiny.
It's probably not very thick.
No, like you blow it up, it fills up with air.
Yeah, I mean... Mine's basically just nylon with a little bit of Mylar in it for insulation.
No, his isn't insulated.
The thing rolls up to like the size of a Nalgene. So I'm going to weigh my pack, Justin, this weekend.
You should.
And just like figure out exactly what it weighs before we go on the trip. But I am fucking excited. It's going to be a good time. I just don't want to be cold. So I went a little bit too far on the one end.
You'll be fine.
Also, the difference in weight for a titanium pot versus an aluminum pot, like at that point, you're just trying to flex as light as possible. You're talking
a couple ounces.
Not even that. There was the one cup that I have. It's like a half ounce difference between the aluminum and the titanium because it's such a small little cup.
Right, but you can say that you paid $300 for your cup.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that's like having carbon.
Ounces make pounds, dude.
But that's like having everything carbon on your bow. You know, it's like, no, I don't shoot an aluminum sight bracket. The fuck? I shoot the carbon pro. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is stupid. I think it's so funny, though, is, like, the guys will go buy the new Matthews, and I told Jared this jokingly, but I might do it. There's a really big pro shop out there in Utah. If they have the Matthews I want, I might drive home with a new bow. But I think it's really funny when guys will go buy, like, the new Matthews, and they put aluminum fucking stabilizers on it, the bridge lock stabilizers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're really stiff. They're also heavy as fuck. And, like, why would you not? And you're paying $250 for a stabilizer when you could buy a Shrewd Rev-X. Like, if you buy a $15 bridge lock stabilizer from Matthews, I want to say it's $270. You could buy a Shrewd Rev-X 15-inch stabilizer for, I want to say, $190. So you can save yourself, what, $80? And you're shooting a lighter weight, arguably stiffer, carbon stabilizer compared to an aluminum. The only advantage is the bridge lock stuff where you can slide it in and out and change the lengths and stow it away and all that. I'm not sold on that.
Yeah,
I love quick disconnects and I just put them in the bow case. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care. That's how it's always been. Why? Like, I just don't get that part.
Yeah.
If they were a cheaper option or even the same price, it might be a little bit better. But then it's a proprietary weight that you have to put on. You can't put normal weight on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's dumb.
And so I'm like, it's stupid. Because most of them are like quarter 20 thread.
Mm-hmm.
So I can get tungsten weight if I want a ton of weight on there. I can get tungsten weights from Lancaster that are just like, you know, AAE branded. Or I don't even know if AAE makes them, but like Easton branded. Right. Or Shrewd branded or CBE, and I can just put them on any of my stabilizers.
Right.
I don't have to worry about it. But with the bridge lock stabilizers, you have to buy them from Matthews. And the stabilizer only comes with like they might be 1 ounce weights, but let's say there's 2 ounce weights on there, 2 1 ounce weights. I'm like, that's not enough for me.
Yeah.
I looked at my bow the other day on the Traverse, what I ended up running. There's 4 ounces in the front on a 15-inch stabilizer, and there's six or seven ounces on the back.
Wow.
That bow has a lot of weight on it.
Yeah.
But the bow weighs 7.5 pounds dressed.
Sure.
Yeah. It's light, though. Or it's light. It's stable. Your bow's heavy.
My bow's
heavy. But your bow's 34, right? 34 inches axle to axle?
33.
Why do I want to say it's 34?
I don't know.
My bow's 33. The Traverse is 33. Mm-hmm. So the new Matthews I want, 27.5 inches axle to axle. We've talked about that a million times, yeah. But that's exciting. That is tiny, dude. That is really tiny. But, yeah. Before we wrap this up here.
Oh, did you talk about in the last podcast your gun?
I think so.
Yeah, we covered that.
Oh, okay.
Shadow Systems DR920 Elite, if anyone's curious. Okay, because we talked about red dots.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Which I still haven't. I don't know. I got to do more research and figure out the red dot that I want, because I think to get the small enough MOA, because I don't want a 6 MOA dot. I want like a 2.25 or a 3 MOA dot. So to get a small enough dot on the red dot and have just a dot, not like a circle and a dot, on that version of the Hollisons, I think is like 400, like just over $400. And at that point, I'd rather just spend the extra $100 and buy the Trigicon, because then it's made in the U.S., you know, support the brand, whatever. It's not really the name brand thing. I've never seen like a micro red dot for a pistol from Aimpoint, but I'd consider Aimpoint too.
Yeah.
It's just hard. Like, that's a lot of money to spend on a red dot for. It's just low priority right now.
Right.
So, prioritizing all this backpacking stuff, whatever. But yeah, before we wrap this up, Jared, what part of the trip are you looking forward to the most? Because you've kind of done the whole backpacking thing before, but this is like different areas for you.
I would say probably like Arches and Zion.
Yeah, Zion's gonna be sweet.
Just because, I've been to Utah before when I did that 2-week trip out west, and we covered quite a bit of the state. I mean, we went into southern Utah. We did Capitol Reef. We drove through Dixie National Forest, and then we drove up north. We were actually going to stay south and do the U.S.'s loneliest highway all the way out to California.
Oh.
It's a road. There's very few stops. Like, you got to have gas cans to make it through it. Unless you're really smart about your gas and whatnot. But anyways, we were looking for hot springs and whatnot. We found one down south, but it sucked. And it was lukewarm water, so we're like, ah, screw that. And we went up north to Salt Lake City and Provost. And on the way up, it was actually pretty cool. There was a lot of canyons and stuff. There was some flash flooding. There was Dixie National Forest, was really cool. And then once we got up to Utah, we drove around through Salt Lake, or up to Salt Lake City. We drove around through the city, and it was actually pretty cool. And then once we got to Fifth Waller Hot Springs, I mean, just a crazy area. I mean, it was super cool up there. Like,
yeah,
mountainous, lots of really cool red rock, and the river was cool. And then the hot springs were just awesome up there. Best hot springs I've ever been to. And then after that, where'd we go? We went somewhere else in Utah as well. But anyways, yeah, it was a lot of fun up there. But yeah, I really wanted to go see like the arches, and that you always see on Instagram, the posts of people like walking through that really narrow area. And it's,
yeah,
like, straight walls going up next to you. That's I think that's in the Arches, or that Rainbow wave or whatever. I don't know the name of it. Yeah. I don't know the exact names of them, but some of the really famous attractions down in southern Utah. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. It's going to be a good trip.
That, and hopefully we got full coverage on that rental vehicle. We're going to take it through Moab.
I'm sure he got good insurance on it. That'd be stupid to take a rental car halfway across the country and not put insurance on it.
Yeah.
But
what?
Just looking at Jared.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't take it halfway across the country. Thank you very much.
That's still crazy. Whatever.
Oh, right, because you flew.
Yeah.
Still.
It's still.
I recently rented a vehicle and didn't put any insurance on it.
For like 3 days, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't really drive around that much. Like, I don't know. I guess I did kind of drive it around a decent bit. But I was very cautious and safe while I was driving, so. I was scared, like, anything that could go wrong, I was worried
about.
Yeah,
I'd have just paid the $90 to put insurance on it, but whatever. That.
I saved $100.
Yeah.
And nothing happened, so didn't learn my lesson either.
There you go.
Well, that was a cool trip. I got to see the Alamo and the Riverwalk and whatnot. It was a really cool area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right on. Well, actually, this would probably be a good time to tell everybody. So this obviously comes out the 14th. Well, no, we will be able to record Sunday.
This is the last ever episode of Knox and Nature.
No.
Sorry, guys.
Hope not.
Kidding.
We might. There's a slight possibility based on our trip. I'll actually try to look at this schedule a little bit better here, because we can record the 22nd, and then that one would come out the 28th, but then we're also gone the 7th, right? The 8th and 9th. So we're going to have either a short week, or it's possible that we may have to skip a week upload because of this trip, which is unfortunate, but sometimes it's just the way it goes. So we'll play it by ear, but if we
maybe I'll just record a podcast by myself.
Do it. I'll walk you through how to upload it. Get your dad on there and talk about your trip to Isle Royale or something.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll figure something out. If there isn't going to be an upload, we'll put something on the Instagram page, but I'm sure we'll figure something out. So, yeah. Appreciate everybody for listening. We'll catch you in episode 18.